You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, everybody. Tonight's terrifying video, I am giving you three spelunking horror stories. Cave exploration, cave diving, hiking in a cave gone wrong. Now sit back, relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. I was called out on an emergency dive on the 12th of April 2013. Back then, I usually did forensic and rescue dives, but this was something different entirely. Usually when I got called out, time is a definite and measurable factor. For example, someone could be in mortal danger, or there is a time-sensitive object that needs to be retrieved. This time, the objective wasn't clear. My first impression was that this was something catastrophic. I was called up in the middle of the night with no warning, and there was talk of a measurable geological event. I wasn't briefed, and every person involved just stonewalled me with a barrage of I don't knows. I knew pretty much anyone who worked on my level statewide, but these people were just gray-faced anonymous nobodies. They drove me all the way to Greenbrier Valley, West Virginia. Just imagine this middle-of-nowhere dirt road covered by government-issued vehicles. Off the top of my head, I registered people from the USACE, United States Army Corps of Engineering, the NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, and USGS, United States Geological Survey, and the WVDNR, West Virginia Division of Natural Resources. Those were just the ones I could recognize, but at least half of the vehicles were unmarked or straight-up lies. I swear, one of them claimed to be a dang catering business. I was pushing through a crowd of people. Some were screaming at their phones. Others were screaming at one another. There was this one red-faced middle-aged man almost crying with frustration at a young woman. He kept waving his papers at her, and all she did was nod and smile. Somewhere along the line, people started asking me questions. What's the ETA on your prep? Did you bring your own gear? Are you signed in? Where's the sign-in? There were other people I'd worked with on site. There was Garrett, who had just turned 44, and Nora. I worked with Nora on a couple of rescue dives, but nothing on this scale. There was a few faces in the crowd that I vaguely recognized. But Garrett and Nora stood out. They were already suiting up. They were preparing for a cold dive and checking their equipment. I had some papers shoved in my hands. As I signed in, I could see a bubble of people forming around one of the USACE representatives and an older woman in a professional pantsuit. "You got 12 hours," said the woman in the pantsuit. "Not a second longer. This is private property." "We can stall," said the representative. "We could drag you through the courts." "Go ahead. I'm sure the judge is eager to hear you explain your sudden interest in our property. We don't have to explain crap, you frickin' vulture. In 12 hours, you will be considered trespassers. We will bring in private security, and you'll be escorted off the premises. The woman in the pantsuit took a step forward, stabbing at the USACE representative with a stack of papers. Our Congress is eager to have you defunded, you frickin' dolt. As the conversation died down, the representative was left seething in the dirt. She was funning, and no one dared approach her. After a few seconds, she stormed off. Frickin' hatchet men. Someone in the crowd whispered as the woman in the pantsuit walked off. Garrett waved me over, and I sat down on a log next to him. I started to dress down. Someone needs to talk to me, I said. Someone tell me what's going on. Earthquake, said Nora. Not a big one, but yeah. What the hell does this have to do with an earthquake? It's the lake, said Garrett. You'll see. Still putting on my gear, we were pushed forward. They took me by the arm and forced me on, drowning me in questions along the way. When we finally stepped through the forest clearing, what was supposed to be a small lake opened up to us. Except it wasn't a lake anymore. The water had been drained, leaving only a bed of dirt behind. Hundreds of seagulls picking up dying fish in a cacophony of screeches. Men in hazmat suits were trying to chase them off, but only ended up slipping back and forth in the mud. In the middle of the drained lake was a hole, about 6 by 4 feet. It was the only space that still retained water. There were tables set up around it, along with security tape and red flags. About a dozen people spread out along a dozen laptops, making calculations and checking measurements. An anonymous woman popped up next to us, pushing us forward. I could sense the warmth of the sun on the horizon, about an hour from dawn. We're doing a blind dive, she said. We need you to be in constant communication with us about anything you see. You'll be going in within the hour. We're not doing that, said Garrett. There's no emergency here. There's no... Suddenly, Garrett came tumbling into the mud. The woman had pushed him. You're doing this, she snarled. You're frickin' doing this. We're not doing crap until we get... You see that? She interrupted Garrett, pointing to the army of vehicles. That right there is the sworn frickin' oath that I will burn your damn life to the ground, you cocky F. Now you do this, or you'll never touch a frickin' glass of water again. Nora helped Garrett up, and we hurried down to the hole. I could barely hear anything over the feasting seagulls. I was thankful for the rubber mask keeping me from the smell of dead fish. Two men tried their best to prep the basics, but we had nothing. There was basically no dive plan, no idea about the temperature, the stability, the currents, nothing. These people were completely clueless. The only thing they could answer was the size of what we were getting into. The small quake had revealed a sprawling cave system, which the lake water had drained into. Roughly 350 feet wide and 700 feet deep, all underground. I tried my best to wrap my head around it. We tested our co-linked masks and settled on individual tracking lines. We had been diving for 20 minutes, then set aside 25 for resurfacing and depressurizing. We would be having air tanks on rotation and constant contact with those up at the control. At the slightest sign of trouble, we'd bail, no questions asked. There was no way we would go in blind for any longer than that. We agreed on resurfacing if there was a comms malfunction, even though we all knew hand signals by heart. This couldn't go wrong on any level. We were still setting up when we were given hand chisels and self-sealing bags. "We want samples of everything," they told us. Everything. Let's try to put this into perspective. At this point, we barely knew anything. An earthquake had revealed a cave system on some kind of company property. The size and depth of this area was unfathomable. In 12 hours, we would be kicked off the site, possibly so they could perform their own tests. This cave system had been completely isolated, possibly for tens of thousands of years. Maybe hundreds. Someone even kept throwing around the term Karoo Ice Age. But that seemed
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. Your number two burns the hair in my nose, but we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
Probable. This place would either be a unique resource or a complete waste of time. We were at least 1 or 2 hours in on the countdown when we first dipped our toes in the water. It was much colder than anticipated. As I sat on the edge, dangling my feet in the murky water, one of the on-site technicians double-checked my air tanks. "Exciting, isn't it?" he smiled. "I'm jealous." "How come?" "You get to explore," he chuckled, "an actual space that no human eyes have ever seen before." "That's not always a good thing," nodded Nora, "and there's plenty of that on the ocean floor." We took that first plunge. I could barely see anything because of the mud and the reeds, so we just went straight down. The water got colder with every foot, and little dust particles whizzled past me, made it feel like diving through a rainstorm. As we got further down, the sense of unease settled in my chest. I had never been so ill-prepared for a dive, and this was beyond anything I had ever experienced. There's a reason why people are advised to stay out of underwater caves. This was, in more ways than one, uncharted waters. We went down about 25 feet, where we finally hit rock bottom. The cave wall was rough and sharp, with some kind of thin crystal layer. Salt, I figured. Nora got a sample as anonymous voices buzzed in our ears. I could barely make out half of it. "Go deeper," a voice came through. "There's nothing up there." We mapped out 3 different tunnels leading further down. The first one we checked turned out to be so thin, my equipment risked being snagged on the walls. We backed out and tried another tunnel until we found one large enough for us to feel comfortable moving through. Still, it was more crawling than swimming. "Turtle One, we're getting seismic," a voice came through. "Please respond." "Stand by, equalizing." I could feel the mechanism from the camera on my shoulder whirring. Garrett came through on the local channel. "No way the signal sticks," he sighed. "Frickin' granite and quartz. this is pointless. Resurface in 10, I said. Check for samples in the cracks. The tunnel led us down to a small cave. The water was less murky, but the space was only about 15 by 20, and at most 6 feet high. It was enough for us to regroup, check our tethers, and take a few samples. Nora found some kind of transparent goo lining the crack in the wall, while Garrett tried to chisel off a piece of the granite. I thought I saw something shimmering, but it was just the light from my camera reflecting off a piece of quartz. I grabbed it, though. I couldn't come up empty-handed. Once our time was up, we came back up for air. We were slow and methodical, but we were getting results. There was no way we'd reach the bottom in 12 hours, but we figured we could get something interesting given enough dives. When we came back up, there was at least 50 people standing in a circle to look at us. Men in hazmat suits brought coolers for us to put the samples in, and two technicians were working on a hookah air hose system. We took a short break to wait for them to finish it, changing up our air tanks, and plan our second dive. This time, we could go deeper. The air hoses could reach 60 feet, but they were already working on an extension. Still, Garrett insisted on refreshing our air tanks as well, just in case. As we hooked up the air hoses, the stiff chemical air from our tanks was exchanged with this musky forest breeze, stinking of dead fish and mud. There was also a little whiff of diesel from one of the on-site generators. As we dove back into the murky waters, we headed straight for the tunnels. This time we were going deeper, past the reeds, past the mud. We mapped out three tunnels going further and further down. We moved carefully, our new air hoses working as tethers. But it didn't take us long to reach the limit. Nora called it in. Surface control, we need a longer line. No response. We waited for a moment, but there was nothing on the other end. Time-wise, it was probably around the break of dawn. Just like Garrett said, we'd gone too deep to hold a solid signal. I could go up and relay, said Garrett. Or we could just tug and hope for the best. I'm not tugging on an air hose, chuckled Nora. Little bursts of static. The camera on my shoulder whirred like crazy. Nora gave me the hand signal for resurfacing and took point. Garrett and I followed. Time to bail. There was a deep rumbling sound coming from beneath. It felt like the ground itself was trying to start a diesel motor. Cycles of rumbling, making cracks in the walls. Something big was happening, and we had to get out now. I could feel my breath shortening as my body realized that air was no longer a certainty. The moment Nora got through the first tunnel, I saw the rock wall shift. Solid, knife-sharp granite moved with the ease of a child smacking a balloon. To the sound of a deafening thunderstorm, the tunnel collapsed above us, the air hoses got cut, and Nora's foot was crushed in a pulp. Together, they sprayed air and bone fragments into the water as the sound of our collapsing world got loud enough to rattle my bones. Parts of a blood-curdling screech came through our comms as the water started to move. We were being sucked down. I protected my head as I was being tossed around the tunnels, further and further down. My air tank clinked against the wall. I instinctively gasped for air, but I could feel water rushing into my mask. There was no air supply on the other end, and the hose was cut clean. The walls rushed past me. I slammed my shoulder, my knee, my thigh, my shoulder. At one point, I smacked the back of my head, and I could feel my body temperature shift. It was a wound, but not a deep one. Somewhere in the chaos, I felt the camera on my shoulder come loose, and I got into a roll. I spun out of control and lost all sense of distance. It wasn't just a few seconds of suction either. It was a significant amount of time. My world spun and bashed me into the rocks over and over and over. I could feel blood leaving my body, and I was getting cold. Colder and colder, but I couldn't tell if it was blood loss or the water. The word disoriented doesn't begin to describe it. At some point, it just stopped. I was floating in this endless pool of darkness, a black bottomless ocean. I couldn't tell what was up and what was down anymore. I tried to move upwards, but it didn't feel right. Not only did my arm refuse to move, but there was too much resistance. It took me a few seconds to realize I was trying to swim downwards. I was upside down. There was water pulling in my mask. I could feel it just under my mouth. I could see little air bubbles popping, and I had to spit to keep my mouth clear. It had a strange sugary taste, mixed with iron, but most of it was blood. Something grabbed me. My first instinct was to fight, but I couldn't. I had strained my arm, and my left foot was dislocated. I was shivering, and I could see a long gash across my thigh. That was just at the limit of what my mask light could pick up. I couldn't even see my feet. Garrett came in the focus. He made a hand movement that I couldn't recognize. A closed fist with fingers pushing outwards. A push? An exhale? Right. I exhaled hard, pushing out the water in my mask. The next second, Garrett connected my air tank to my mask. For a moment, we just looked at one another. He had a bad cut above his right eye, and it was bleeding into his mask.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
Pro savings days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Comms were dead. We had to rely on hand signals. Garrett put a hand on my cheek and checked my mask for cracks. It seemed okay. He gave me the signal for okay, and I responded in kind. I was not okay, but I was well enough to move, if a little bit slower. We moved carefully and calmly. There was no way to tell how far down we were, and we had to be careful to preserve our air. At most, we had a little less than an hour of air if we could keep steady. Probably a lot less, though. Garrett and I held hands, slowly going upwards. It felt right. I was oriented. We kept moving, but it felt like we hadn't moved at all. The water was still black, and nothing changed. But at one point, Garrett suddenly stopped. I moved up next to him and followed his eyes. He looked upwards. Little shimmers in the water. Fish? A school of dozens of little fish. They were about 4 inches long and azure blue. They were completely eyeless with their entire face covered in a thick octopus-like beak. They avoided us to the best of their ability, shooting past at an amazing speed. Still, they were close enough for Garrett to poke them if he wanted to. He didn't, and neither did I. Whatever these were, they were native to this area. They could be venomous. Garrett tightened his grip on my hand, and we kept moving upwards. After 10 minutes of going in a straight line, we came to a full stop. A solid rock ceiling. Just a wall, without the hint of an opening or tunnel. It occurred to me that we might have come down horizontally through a side passage. If that was the case, we were doing the human equivalent of a fly buzzing against a window, trying to get out. We looked around, but the ceiling was almost completely flat. There was no telling where we ought to go. Still, I had to try and keep calm. Panicking would just kill us faster. But even with this seemingly endless large space, I had never felt so trapped in my entire life. I held my breath, trying to slow the shivers. Garrett reached for his chisel, poking at the wall. He managed to dislodge a few kernels of granite. He stared at them, looking at any sign of movement. Apart from sinking, they were slightly drifting to our left. Of course, there was a current. I was simultaneously trying to ignore how much time had passed, and at the same time counting the seconds. Garrett's diving watch was busted, and mine hadn't been properly reset before the second dive. It was still on time for our first. This was exactly the kind of crap I wanted to avoid, but we had been so stressed to get back in. At one point, the ceiling started to curve. And there, finally, was an opening. It seemed to lead upwards. We followed it, squeezing through a tight space where I had to exhale to pass through. Shimmying forward, breathlessly, inch by inch. Tons of unstackable rocks pressing on my aching chest. Then, we broke through the surface. Just like that. We weren't topside. This was an air pocket. It was large enough to fit us both, as long as we squatted a bit. There was a tunnel leading us further, but we decided to catch our breaths. I was the first to shut off my air and clean out the mask, but Garrett was quick to follow. Finally, we could speak freely. Stale, sugary, sweet air filled our lungs. I coughed, making my ribs ache even more.
The lake water, said Garrett. It hadn't settled with the temperature shift from the sunrise. That heated it, got it moving. So where, how deep? At least 300 feet, at least. And that's just straight down. Nora, did you?
No, said Garrett, shaking his head.
It closed. She might be trapped up there, but at least she won't drown.
I nodded, gently massaging my foot. I was going to have to pop it back into place, but just touching my skin sent bolts of pain up my shin bone.
You could wait, he said. You're hurt.
I'm not dying here.
Good.
We caught our breaths and checked our equipment. We had about 3/4 of our tanks left, so we were doing pretty good. We had some cuts and bruises. Some might need stitching. Nothing urgent, but it might get bad if left untreated. Who knew what kind of bacteria was down here? I couldn't stop shivering, and Garrett was getting worried. He kept asking if I was sleepy. Honestly, I could feel it. There was something there, eyelids growing heavy as my lungs strained against my ribs. We got back under the water, our equipment clean and secured. The tunnels were slowly widening, allowing us to travel forward. There were a few intersections, and we did our best to map where we had gone. I had some remaining scrapes that ripped the air hose that were pushed in cracks in the wall, sort of marking our path like breadcrumbs. At the very least, we could get back to the air pocket if necessary. We went down a few tunnels, only to be met with a series of dead ends. It was a dang labyrinth,
and my heart sank with every stop. When we finally found a path going forward, we had a difficult choice to make. We could circle back and regroup or push forward and save some time. Every minute moving backwards would be at a loss, but every minute forward could be a death sentence. Garrett squeezed my hand, looking for some kind of guidance. I sighed forward. The tunnel opened into a vertical shaft going straight up. I could feel a slight rush of water gently pushing us back down. It was only for a moment, but it made me realize that the current was getting stronger. Suddenly, the water started to shimmer. Hundreds of those colored fish rushed past us, down into the depths of the tunnels. Maybe they followed the current. Either way, they had to come from somewhere, so we pushed forward. Garrett squeezed my hand in celebration. There was another set of tunnels in the ceiling, branching in several paths. They all looked deep enough to lead somewhere, so we just picked one at random. I couldn't mark our path any further. I had nothing left to leave behind. We kept going upwards until Garrett suddenly stopped. There was something shimmering in the tunnel ahead, some kind of gemstone or quartz. They reflected the lights of our masks, another dead end, or eyes. These nightmare orbs, predatory and unfeeling, an unthinking creature incapable of seeing me as a person. For that 1 second, I was nothing but meat. It came out of the dark. It had these long, bone-like arms, like a rubbery spider monkey needle-sharp teeth made for stripping flesh and bone. It didn't swim. It crawled along the rocky walls. It was fast. Fast enough to catch the little fish. It was large, but that didn't slow it down. It could barely squeeze through the tunnel, while Garrett and I could still move freely. We were never meant to meet that thing. Never. To this day, I can't look down dark corridors. I can imagine those arms reaching out for me. I ignored every safety precaution I had ever known. I rushed, I huffed, I screamed, I crawled, kicked, and forced myself back down as fast as humanly possible. I didn't care about the searing pain in my foot. I just had to keep going. All I could feel was the water moving behind me, as every sudden movement transferred into waves pushing against my aching limbs. But I didn't care. At that moment, I didn't care about anything but getting away. At the mouth of the tunnel, I turned around for a brief second, only to see Garrett's wide eyes staring back at me. In that moment, I could tell what he was thinking.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He realized that he was about to die. Long fingers wrapped around him as his right arm was ripped from his socket. I could feel the snap reverberating through the tunnel. Vibrations from his death screams reached me, but all I could hear was my own panicked breathing. I remember flashes of shimmering fish as I fled down tunnel after tunnel after tunnel. I didn't see a single marker. Every bump of the foot made my eyes tear up, and I could feel a sore starting to build around the edge of my nose from the crying. There was another air pocket, but I just kept moving forward. I had no idea where I was, but I could just feel those dark eyes looking at me, arms reaching for me. The air in my tank started to feel strange. Warm, panicked, I kept going forward. When I finally came to another air pocket, I tore my mask off and shut the air tank. Everything tasted blood and salt, and I couldn't stop crying. It was just this small space, but just big enough for my head to fit in and tilted to the right. The light on my mask was dying. It had started to flicker. If I held it in the right angle, it'd be fine, but it was just a matter of time. I stayed there for at least 10 minutes, just trying to breathe. I was lost and cold. There was no telling how long I had been down there. I couldn't even tell how much air I had left in my tank, but it wasn't much. If I wanted more, I'd have to ration it, but I couldn't move without it. There was no way I'd be lucky to find another air pocket within, what, a minute of free diving? But I couldn't stay there. I didn't trust a single person up there. There was no rescue parties coming down here anytime soon. Even if they wanted to, could they? And even without a predator stalking these tunnels, I was going to freeze to death, and I was still bleeding. Wait, bleeding? Shoot. My pulse rose as I felt something shift. A pressure in the tunnel underneath. There was no way I could move fast enough. I just had the hope against hope it wouldn't find me. Maybe it didn't hunt like a shark. I held my breath and felt strokes of movement in the water. It was moving this way. I closed my eyes so hard my head started to spin. Tears trickled out of my eyes, making little popping noises as they hit the surface of the water. It was barely audible, but to me it felt like hammer blows. The stroke stopped. It was close. I carefully opened my eyes to look down, but everything was dark. My mask light had given up. Moments later, the strokes continued past me. Maybe it wasn't used to hunting humans, or maybe it was taking its prey back to its nest. When I could no longer feel the strokes, I exhaled, coughing violently. My mouth tasted blood. There was no choice left. I had to keep going with what little I had. I secured my mask and let my hands rest in the water for a moment. Just floating around in that little space was unlike anything I had ever experienced before. It was such an alien, primal feeling. I had been in trouble before, but nothing like that. Nothing even remotely like that. I slowed my breathing and took the plunge. To my surprise, there was one strange sensation I hadn't noticed. When the lights were off, it was easier to sense the current. Maybe it was a rely on other senses kind of thing, but it was much clearer. Even in the dark, I could feel the right way for me to go. A circulation of some kind coming from above. As I came to a branching tunnel, it was a bit harder to tell which way I was supposed to go. I decided to just keep going up, so I did. The current was getting stronger, and all of a sudden, I breached into another air pocket. But I could hear something, a metallic clinking. It didn't take me long to find it, Garrett's air tank. On one hand, I was incredibly lucky. On the other hand, that thing was close, really close. It still had a little juice left in the tank. So I hobbled forward. This air pocket was large, more like a cavern. Ankle-deep water forcing me to walk and actually feel my body weight. I had never felt so heavy in all my life, and the equipment didn't help. I was so tired. I could easily have lied down and just died or slept, whatever came first. Instead, I pushed on with an extra tank in hand. I kept going further and further up. I started to hold my breath for as long as I could, using only what little air I had when absolutely necessary. I could feel more of those little fishes rushing past me, sometimes with me, sometimes towards me. It dawned on me that they may be fleeing a pursuing predator, and that I was an idiot for not following them. Then again, they might just be following the current. There was no way to tell. I must have flailed around through caves, passages, and tunnels for hours, using every air pocket I could find, and eventually just ditching my tank. All I had was what scraps remained of Garrett's tank. Every foot started to feel like a death sentence. Like I was digging my own grave. Maybe if we had just stayed put in the first place, someone would have just found us. Maybe being proactive was the wrong move. I was going upwards when I felt the air in Garrett's tank start to go bad. When I managed to breach into yet another air pocket, I just threw it aside. This was it. This was the end of the line. The tank clanged against the sides of the cave, and somewhere further in, I heard a noise. A little gasp. Something had heard me. I stuck myself to the wall as I heard large wet feet slapping against the cave floor. It had this strange frog-like breath, like air pushing against a membrane. I was standing in a painful angle, putting all my weight on my healthy foot. It had stopped. It listened. Blood dripping from my arm, plopping against the water. Luckily, it didn't hear me or care. Instead, I heard a bone snap like a carrot. Then the sound of gnawing and eager suckling. I must have stood there paralyzed for at least a half an hour. Then I heard it go down a side tunnel and disappear into the deep. This was my shot. I hobbled away, only to step on something. A partially devoured foot. From that point on, it was just systematic and careful plunges. Follow the current for 30 seconds. If I couldn't feel a way forward, I turned back, caught my breath, and tried a different path. I was holding my breath so much that my chest had started to ache more than my foot. Still, I was making progress. Finally, I came to this large vertical chute. I felt a rush going upwards. There had to be something, anything. I held my breath for as long as I could, waiting for the surface, the air pocket. But this time, there was nothing. Dead end. I just slammed into a smooth surface, knocking myself over the head. A part of me wanted to scream so bad that the air pushed out of my lungs. I could feel a cramp in my leg. Pain as my body retched and turned. But the surface was smooth. Unnaturally so. Almost metallic. I pounded it with my fist. It was thin but heavy. Definitely metallic. But with every pounding fist, I could feel something else move. Something was coming up from below. It found me. It started with a tickle against my good leg. These little fingers tenderly wrapped themselves around my ankle, ready to pull me down. I didn't let it. I kicked, crawled, pushed myself upwards, and pounded the material. A cramp in my arm forced me to scream. Something grabbed me from below, pulling me down at least 4 feet before I managed to kick myself loose. Gaining momentum, I flung myself upward, again crashing into the metallic surface. But this time...
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
It buckled. Just an inch, but it buckled. Suddenly, There was light, air, and whatever reached for me recoiled in fear. 4 men had moved what looked like a makeshift manhole cover out of the way, and they pulled me up. I didn't even notice I was breathing. I just forced air into my lungs so I could keep screaming, and screaming, and screaming. Turns out Nora had made it to the surface. She had lost a foot, but she made it. She had been airlifted out, and the entry was sealed. They had tried to get another diving team, but there was no one else around. If they had more time, they could have flown out another crew of 4 from Minnesota. I was down there in total for 9 hours and 37 minutes. I had to sign a contract not to speak about this for 10 years. That time is up, and now I'm telling you what I know. Garrett died down there, and Nora was permanently maimed. I like to consider myself lucky, but I didn't come out of this unscathed either. I don't want to go into detail, but there are wounds that isn't as easily seen as a missing foot. That space was bought by this investment company called Hatchet. I'm pretty sure they're still operating there today. I've seen the chain-linked fences and the warning signs, not to mention the armed guards. I've since moved on from diving. I can barely swim in a pool anymore. And honestly, I'm fine with that. My relationship was starting to get on the rocks, so I did the only thing anyone would. I took my girlfriend for a romantic cave walkthrough. All right. Don't judge me. I'm sure I had a good reason why I decided to take her to an old abandoned mine. In fact, I was going to propose in the old abandoned mine. The date was set, and the ring safely tucked away in my pocket. The last section of the mine had a type of rock that glinted in dim light. I figured that would be a good place to do the deed, even though a romantic dinner may have been a better idea. The first sign of trouble was 2 of our mutual friends came along making it a double date. That's fine. I could deal with it. I could easily drop them hints to get them out of the way before I got down on one knee. When we arrived, Tabby and Jason were waiting for us out front. We needed to do a little hike to get to the entrance, and Leia was already in the mood. Her shoes and massive purse were not meant for a hike or walking around in an old mine. She refused to leave her purse in the car and claimed she didn't have any other shoes. I gave our friends a wave when I saw them and walked over to them. We stood chatting for a bit and getting caught up on each other's lives while standing outside the old mine's entrance. When Leia was off taking a smoke break, I got in close to whisper to my friends about the plan. Could you guys, give us a few minutes alone when we reach the dead end with all the nice rocks? I need to ask Leia something, I told them, hoping my hint got through.
Oh, Jamie.
Tabby started to shut up real fast. From her tone, she almost sounded sad. Maybe she wanted to get married first. No problem. We'll leave you to it. Jason butted in. With everything planned out, we were all set to go inside the cave. Leia joined us, and soon we were all walking along and chatting. But Leia kept a bit silent, checking her phone pretty often, even though I doubted she had a signal. I was nervous as hell, more than I had been in my entire life, and I prayed I was acting normal.
Oh, I forgot my water bottle in the car, Tabby said suddenly.
So much for acting normal. Jason nervously nodded and took her hand. I'll help you get back and look for it. Without giving us a chance to answer, they both ducked out of the cave, leaving us alone sooner than I thought.
Let's hurry up so I can get home before I miss my show, Leia told me, taking the lead.
We could always stream it later. That was not the right answer. She gave me a nasty look, and I started to wonder where my sweet girlfriend went. For a few weeks, she had been getting annoyed easier and always on her phone. It made me second-guess everything I've done, wondering what set her off. We walked in silence. My phone buzzed. It was a text from Jason encouraging me. I smiled, then my phone suddenly shut off. I frowned, trying to turn it back on. I wasn't too worried when it didn't boot up right away. It looked like Leia still worked in case we needed one. I put it back in my pocket to check over later. The way to the dead end was an easy one. Just straight until we hit the three forked paths and take the left opening. Then just keep walking. The other paths led to more dead ends, but none as impressive as the one we were going towards. Leia let out a sound, and I guessed her phone started to have issues. That rock looks like a dagger, I pointed out, not knowing what to say or how to start as we walked into the entranceway of the glimmering room. Leia looked down at the rock, not looking very impressed. In fact, she hadn't looked impressed at all during the trip. I was trying to ask this girl to marry me today, and yet I was at a loss of how to bring it up. Before we arrived, I had this all planned out in my head, but now it was a blank. I want to leave, Leia said a few seconds after we arrived at the dead end of the sparkling walls. I expected her to be impressed at least by a small amount. Even if you didn't like rocks, the sight of the glimmering wall should be enough to move even the most stubborn of people to a positive emotion. My heart sank, and I was certain that I wasn't going to get the question that day. I needed to regroup and think of a different plan. All right, let's meet up with Tabby and Jason. My voice sounded small and defeated. I put my hand into my pocket, feeling the ring box, promising I would think of a better plan. I just needed more time and I should relax. For whatever reason, today was just not my day. We walked the same way we took to get to that dead end, and somehow got turned around. There was a spot where the path forked into three ways. We took the left one to get to the inner dead end chamber, and should have just walked right back to the forked area and towards the path with the light. There was no path with light coming from it. I stayed on the left side thinking it felt wrong, only for us to loop back around to the forked path once again. I gave a nervous laugh over my shoulder to a very unimpressed Leia. She tapped her foot and I decided on the right side, and we looped back again. Checking my phone, I wanted to text Tabby asking for a map, but my phone refused to go past the lock screen. I assumed it was maybe something in the rocks messing with it. We already took the two side openings, so logic would say the middle would lead us out. "We're never getting out of here," Leia whined. I didn't blame her for getting a bit annoyed and whiny. We had been trapped in the dark for at least a half an hour by now. I just didn't understand how it was possible. There was only a few forks in the path. One was bound to lead out. I was positive that the middle path was the way out, but now I wasn't so sure. As we rounded a corner, I saw the dagger-shaped rock and my heart sank. The rocks glittered in my dim flashlight. We ended up right where we were at the end of the path. "See? I told you," Leia hissed, frustrated. She dug into her massive purse and pulled out a pack of cigarettes. She promised to quit. Now wasn't the time to remind her. I didn't care if she was still smoking, but I didn't think it was wise for her to light up inside an old mine. Who knows if there was still old gas still inside. Wasn't that a major issue all mines had? "Maybe you shouldn't smoke in here," I told her meekly. "Give me one good reason," she replied sharply. I didn't have one. I suddenly felt on the spot for the lack of knowledge about mines. I had only taken her because I thought it would be pretty. Feeling guilty for the whole situation we found ourselves in, I turned away from her. Looking over the shimmering wall, I started to second-guess myself about how many paths this mine really had, and if it was possible I had missed one in the dark. A sound from behind us made me tense up. I was just about to check my cell phone and nearly dropped it when I heard soft footsteps coming from down the tunnel. It wasn't Leia's. I could tell that much. I turned on my feet, shining a flashlight down the dark path, wondering what I could see. It sounds silly that I expected anything but a person. Being underground plays with your imagination. My beam of light landed on a boy, blonde hair standing out in the dark, big blue eyes staring over at us. He was wearing flip-flops, so that was the source of the strange walking footsteps. His t-shirt looked at least 5 times too big for his frame. He couldn't be a little older than 13, if that. Leia gave him a side eye and didn't acknowledge him. "Hey, little guy, what are you doing down here?" I should have asked him the way out, but the moment I saw him, I was more worried about the child being alone. "Mushroom collecting," he answered back in a small voice. I looked at him, confused. He opened his hand to show off a mushroom that looked like the same texture of the rock glittering walls. Lifting his long shirt, he put the mushroom in a baggy side pocket of his shorts. "What are you doing down here?" he asked, looking between us. "Clearly we're having fun," Leia snapped. She dropped the last of her cigarette and stomped on it with her heel. I ignored her bad attitude and wished that she would tone it down so she wouldn't scare the kid away. "We got lost, actually. Could you show us the way out, please?" I asked in a sweet tone, hoping it would counter Leia's. The boy gave us a long stare, then nodded. I thanked him, and we started to follow him down the path. I tried to take Leia's hand, but she pulled away, still angry over being lost. "Why are we trusting a kid to get us out?" she said, not even trying to whisper. "Because he knows the way. Doesn't matter if he's a kid or not." "All right, fine. Don't snap at me." I didn't think I raised my voice. She was stressed, so anything would feel like an attack. We all walked in silence as we went down the dark path. I started to hope that the way out was near when I felt some whiffs of fresh air against my face. Now that I was noticing them, I thought I saw more mushrooms camouflaged within the rocks. I had never seen mushrooms like that before and would ask about them when we got out. "There is no way this kid is going to get us out," Leia muttered under her breath. "This way." I just realized I had never asked the boy his name. We turned a corner and I stood in shock, mouth open. Before us was a dead end I hadn't seen before. This didn't make any sense. We should have made it to the trail with the 3 pathways. I even walked up to the solid wall of rock, placing my hand against it to see if it was real. "That doesn't make sense," I said finally. "I told you he would get us lost." Leia was at the end of a rope. She walked off in a huff, digging out her smokes again and started to fiddle with her useless cell phone. I turned my attention to the boy, who looked a bit too calm for being around 2 stressed adults. "What's your name?" I asked him. I might not know the way out, but I could at least start out with information I could learn. He opened his mouth to answer, then shut it again. Clearly, he didn't trust strangers with his name. I didn't blame him. That poor thing must be scared being trapped with us. "How about a nickname? I'm Jamie." He fidgeted and debated on what name he should give me. Finally, he decided on one. Blue eyes looking at me, mostly hidden behind wavy blonde hair. "Ian," he said in a small voice. "That's a good name. I like it. We'll get you home, Ian. Don't worry. How about we head back and see if we could somehow miss a pathway in the dark?" I asked and offered my hand. Holding the child's hand was just a normal reaction. I didn't even think about how it might make him feel more awkward around me. When I realized my mistake, I started to draw it back, but Ian took it before I did. He looked perfectly fine holding on a stranger's hand. In fact, he seemed kind of excited and hided it poorly. Someone should talk to him about trusting strange men in caves. When we got him to his parents, I would mention it. Leia looked back at us in disgust. We're not having one of those, so don't get used to it, she said harshly, and this time took the lead. In that moment, I really wondered what I'd ever seen in her. I shook my head at the thought. She was just stressed out and normally not like this. I gave Ian what I thought to be a comforting smile and we started the walk. And walk. My phone clock kept glitching out and looping backwards, so I had no idea how long we walked for. Ian gave no complaints. I started to get worried. I only expected a short walk and brought no supplies. I suppose when people noticed us missing, this place would be swarming with rescue workers. But how long would that take? Did it only take 3 days to die without water? If my phone was working, I could look that up. Hell, if it was working, I could be out of here by now. We came with some friends. They left before us, and when they see we didn't come back out, they'll send someone, I told Ian, trying to comfort him. As if. I bet those two went right home, and they are finishing dinner in a nice warm bed by now. Leia snapped behind us, her voice echoing. Please, let's not do this right now. I was completely embarrassed over how she was acting. Shuffling Ian behind me, I didn't want him to hear her, but it was impossible in a small space. Do what? Fight? Because you have it coming. Why did you even bring me down to this crappy place? If you were going to propose, why didn't you take me somewhere normal? In her rage, she took off one of her shoes and threw it at me. She missed. Her little temper tantrum was pathetic. Still, I was still hurt by it. You knew? I asked, the ring box feeling like 100 pounds in my pocket. Duh, hand it over. She held out her hand, expecting. What? The ring handed over. I should at least get a look after suffering through all this. I felt a slight tug on the back of my shirt. Ian was peeking from behind me, staring at Leia, barely hiding the disgusted look that matched the one she had given him earlier. I put my hand on his back, feeling a bit sorry that he was stuck here hearing all this drama. I didn't bring the real one. I just have a fake cheap one because the one I ordered didn't come in yet. I lied. She let out a huff of anger and stared down the path again, now missing a shoe. She stomped in a few feet just to try to get away from me. Ian gave me a hint of a smile. I think he was proud that I didn't give in to her demands. I picked up Leia's shoe and gave it a soft toss towards her. I could do that much. It was silently agreed to take a break. Leia was chain-smoking through her pack in front of us, and me and Ian sat down against the hard stone wall. I'm sorry. He gave me a little shake of his head and rested his cheek on my knees. Staring down at where Leia was for a few seconds, he looked back over at me. Is that why you came here, to ask her to marry you? Yes. But I swear she's never like this. I told him, my face flushing in the dark. Have you ever had any fights or gotten in trouble like this? He asked, and I didn't understand where he was getting at. Well, no. Then how do you know how she's like under stress? I guess it would be nice to be with someone and never having any issues. But if you do, then how are you going to deal with your partner going out of control when you never experienced it? How old was this kid? He looked a lot younger than the words he was saying. I thought his generation watched video games and not people dealing with relationship advice. Are you speaking from experience over there? I joked with him. He let out a small smile and his expression went back to the serious one again. It looked as if he was debating on telling me something. How do you think your two friends got out of here? He asked, still not taking his eyes off of where Leia was. They took the right path, I said, stating the obvious. You thought we were going the right way when I started to guide you. What changed your mind? His blue eyes shifted towards mine, and I suddenly felt uncomfortable. There was a change in the air surrounding him in a way I just couldn't place. I couldn't meet his gaze and looked away, trying to remember what had happened when we ran into the dead end. "I don't," I said honestly. Everything that happened just got muddled in my head. "Then pay attention the next few times." Standing up, he waited for me to follow him. All this was strange. Until that point, I just thought we got lost naturally. But now it felt like other forces were at work. I was uneasy, but still wanted to trust the boy. I gave him a small nod and followed him. "We're going to try looking for another way out again," I called out to Leia, only to get a very rude answer back. "Just walk. She'll follow us or not." I almost felt bad for her. She swore at us and hurried after getting delayed to put her shoe back on. We started walking again. This time, I felt as if Ian really did know the way out. But I didn't know what he was trying to prove or show with us. With him leading the way, I yet again felt the slight breeze of fresh air and hope stirred, only to have it come crashing down. "I told you he's just a kid. I bet he got us more lost in the first place." Leia's voice whined behind us. I turned the teller off when I ran directly into a wall. I bounced off, landing on my backside painfully. Swearing, I looked up to see a dead end I couldn't have noticed long before slamming into it. I heard Leia whining behind me, but I didn't even pay attention to her. I dropped my trusty flashlight. It flickered but kept lit. I picked it back up and looked over the wall, wondering how it seemed to appear out of nowhere. Then, to my horror, realized I didn't see Ian.
"This way."
Shining my flashlight down the narrow pathway, I saw the boy behind Leia. That didn't add up. How did he get behind us so fast? She let out a small scream, noticing Ian in the dark. He took off, disappearing, and I got up to follow him, Leia protesting behind me. We both fumbled along, quickening our pace, following his footsteps in the dark, and we kept running into dead ends. No matter which way we went, they all ended in rock walls. We didn't take a new pathway or turn. It was both a straight line both ways, but we kept hitting the blocking walls at different paces. It was just guesswork because our phones had both stopped working. One wall felt like 5 minutes of walking before we hit another. Then we would turn to walk a few seconds before arriving at a wall that was not there before. Leia was complaining the entire time, in near tears. She raged about me being the reason why we were stuck. I heard Ian's footsteps just beyond where my flashlight would reach. Finally, I needed to stop and slumped against the wall, Leia sobbing off somewhere close by. I was getting dehydrated. Doing this without water was taxing on my body. Small footsteps stopped in front of me, and Ian appeared. He sat down, cheeks on my knees, looking over me again. "How do we get out?" I asked him with a pleading tone in my voice. "I can't tell you outright. I'm already late and someone is going to be worried about me, but I could give hints." I really didn't know who Ian was. He didn't even seem human at that point. But I was going to take any help I could get. I sat, flashlight gripped in my hand, the only amount of light and only comfort. "How do you think your two friends got out?" he asked again. I groaned, still not understanding. "Because they took the right path," I answered. "They took what path they thought was the right path," he corrected. I stared at him. It really couldn't be that simple. It just couldn't be. He looked down into the dark where Leia was crying and cursing to herself, and I was embarrassed it took me so long to clue in. "We're trapped because Leia keeps saying we're going the wrong way?" Ian rolled his head on his knees a little, making it hard to tell if he was agreeing with me or not. Sure, The first time he was showing us the way out, Leia doubted it. But it just couldn't be that simple. The world doesn't work like that. There are right paths and wrong paths. Dead ends just don't appear because one person thinks they're trapped. I'm not talking about the way out here. Let me make that clear. I'm not saving you. I'm just giving you an example of how things work. If someone has decided to be miserable, sometimes you cannot change their mind. They're only burdening you, dragging you down. Your friends walked out together. Are you and Leia together right now? Ian asked, sounding serious. Who thought being trapped inside an abandoned mind was the same as being trapped in a terrible relationship? I understood what he was getting at, but I couldn't just leave her. I can't leave her behind, I told him, eyes casting downwards. Then you'll die. He didn't sugarcoat his words. Standing up, he looked down at me, waiting for a few seconds before starting the walk down the dark pathway away from us, his little flip-flops echoing in the darkness. Sitting, I listened to both his footsteps going towards what I knew now was the way out and Leia's soft crying. She either didn't hear us or didn't care. If I left her, she may never get back out. I would be leaving her to die. If I didn't, I would be dead here with her. She wouldn't have a second thought about leaving me behind. I knew that much. My decision was made only after I realized if one of us got out, we could send help to retrieve the other one still lost. Getting up, I followed behind Ian. It was simple as that. I expected to see the right paths out. And I was out. The setting sun blinded me as I walked out of the cave. My phone buzzed in my pocket and my friends did in fact start heading to their car and wanted to see if I was out yet and needed a ride home. I frantically called them, saying Leia was still stuck inside. My entire body turned to ice when both of my friends had no idea who I was talking about. Awkwardly, getting them off the line, I started to go through my photos to see none of Leia. No Facebook account, no message, nothing. She was not only missing, she was just gone. The ring still in my pocket as the only proof she was real, at least to one person. You got out. Good for you. I looked over to my side and saw Ian standing a few feet from me. Because of the light of the sunlight, his hair looked almost white, and his blue eyes took on a reddish tint. After everything, I knew he wasn't human, and yet, I didn't know what he could possibly be. Is she gone forever? I asked. I did fall out of love with her inside that cave, but that didn't change the fact I loved her at some point. I didn't want her to just fade away like this. It's up to her. All she needs to do is walk forwards. Even if she does get out, you really shouldn't marry her. You're not a good match. I felt awful, but still let out a small chuckle in his honesty. I still had one more question for him. Why did you save me? At any point, Ian could have just left us behind. He gained nothing by getting me out of that cave. After my question, he fidgeted with the hem of his shirt and mumbled something I didn't hear. He finally looked up and was acting his age. Any kind of intimidating air from him was gone. I didn't save you. You figured it out on your own. And don't hold someone's hand after just meeting them. They might get attached. Ian snapped, face flushed in the red light. He didn't sound angry, just embarrassed. It took everything I had not to laugh at him. My eyes filled with tears, holding in snorts. The only reason why I was alive is because I treated Ian so kindly. For some reason, he must not have had people offer to hold his hand often enough for it to be a treat when it happened. And I didn't save you, he shouted, face still red, and gave a sharp point in my direction. He stomped one foot, and started to huff away, knowing there was no way for him to regain his composure around me. "Thank you for not saving me," I called after him. I only saw his back, but I think it made him even more embarrassed. Some time had passed since then. I never found out if Ian was his real name or what he was. I'm still very thankful he showed up when he did. I still go by the mine entrance, waiting to see if Leia comes out. If she does, I'm not going to date her. But at least I'm still around to support her and keep her life on track. It might be because I feel guilty, but I guess the reason doesn't matter. Driving down the forested road, playing with my necklace, I could feel the excitement building up in my veins. Music blaring, and going faster than the speed limit in hopes to reach my destination faster. The waiting was finally over, and all my friends were on their way as well. This caving exploration had been in the works for what feels like ages. In reality, it had only been a few months, but still, we were all excited about it. The reason it took so long was trying to find a time to fit for all of us. We're all experienced cavers, and a couple of them I met through work. Josh, Emily, and I have known each other since we were little kids. We grew up together in the same town and explored the shallow caves in the mountains when we were just 13 years old. The other three, Mark, Max, and Jane, are who we met through our search and rescue job, which only four of us still work at. Sure, there were slips, falls, and injuries, but that just makes you more careful the deeper you go. Also, that's the reason Jane and Max left SAR. Well, pregnancy, and some cases were rougher than others, causing them to go to therapy. But all's good now. Babysitters are in place. Time is off, and we're ready to finally explore. The cave we get to go through has only been traversed a handful of times, and the whole trip will take a few days. We added in some camping to it as well. The reason why? Because the first cave leads us under and around back to a clearing in the mountains, where we will be camping out for a day. Then there's a short hike to where the actual cave we want to explore begins. As I pulled my car into the clearing in front of the cave mouth, I saw two other cars waiting for me. Putting it in park and getting out, I saw Mark begin to make his way towards me. Mark was the so-called leader of the group. With having the most experience and hours in caving, he was appointed lead. Then it was me. Then finally third was Emily. Once Mark reached me, I saw an annoyed look on his face. "What's wrong?" I asked, closing my driver's side door. "Max, Emily and Jane got a little held up, so they won't be here for another couple of hours. Something about Jane forgetting her sleeping bag, but who knows? Looks like it's just going to be you, me, and Josh for a while." Dang it! I wanted to get straight to it. This excitement had been eating away at me. "Where's Josh?" I replied, pointing at his car. A smirk went across Mark's face, and then he finally spoke up. "Sleeping, of course." We both shared a laugh before he spoke again. "Why don't we just go in? They have the coordinates. We could just leave a note on one of the cars. They could catch up. It's their fault they're late." As I was about to reply, two honks sounded from behind me. Turning around, I saw it was Emily's car pulling up next to mine. I looked back at Mark, a confused look across his face, and asked, "I thought they were going to be late." "I assumed she was riding with Max and Jane. She always does. I guess not today." "What are you guys yapping about?" Emily said as she got out of her car and began to grab her things from the trunk. "We thought you were riding with Max and Jane," Mark replied while walking back to his car. "I thought I should drive myself in case anything stupid happens, and look at that. I was right." "You all know how late they usually are," Plus, we haven't done something like this in so long. I didn't want to miss it. So what's the plan? Mark turned back around, smiled and nodded at me, saying, "Group vote, excluding Josh. Are we going in or not?" "I guess we're going in. Wake up the sleeping beauty," I said, opening up my hatchback to grab my gear. "That's the spirit, slugger," Emily replied with a laugh and smile at me. "Let's get to it then," I retorted with a wink and laugh. Standing at the mouth of the cave, Josh, Mark, Emily, and I took a few deep breaths of the outside air, savoring the smell and the feel of the breeze that we wouldn't be feeling for a while. All of us looked at each other, smiling, before finally taking our first steps in and beginning the journey. Looking back on it now, we should have ended the expedition within the first hour of going down. The maps that we were given didn't match up to what we were going through, and there were no markers or signs on the walls to tell us others had been there before. Josh was getting very aggravated and annoyed that once he took his fourth slip and scratched up his arm, he said, "F this and F you guys. I didn't want to come here anyways. The map's not right, nothing looks normal, and we've been heading straight down. It's supposed to be going up at this point." "Calm down, you just need to sit down and rest," Emily said with a bit of a chuckle. Josh looked at her with a rage I've rarely seen in his eyes. The only other time I've seen that look was on a search and rescue mission, where a father forced his son through a cave crack, causing him to get stuck. I thought he was going to rip the dad's head off for doing that to his kid. He's not wrong about that feeling off. The maps doesn't show anything we're seeing, and the cave walls look a lot darker than what people have photographed or described. They're almost onyx-like. "I've never seen cave walls this dark before," I said, placing my hand on the wall closest to me, dragging my fingers down. They were also so smooth, almost unnaturally smooth. I know water erosion can make stone this soft, but it just felt off. What if we got the coordinates wrong and went into the wrong cave? Maybe even an unexplored cave? What if? Josh's voice cut off my thoughts as it echoed through the cave. "I'm going back up. I ripped my pants. This place has given me the creeps and I'm all cut up. Shoot me a message when you get out." With that, Josh sat up and began to ascend towards the entrance, Emily on his heels trying to convince him to stay. "Come on, Josh, don't do this. We waited so long for this, just..." Her voice faded away as they rounded a corner and Mark's replaced hers. "Do you think he's right? Are we in the wrong cave? Should we just turn back?" "I don't know. Part of me wants to, but the other part of me wants to see where it leads. What if it's unexplored? If we choose to continue, we could take out our chalk and mark our path along the way." "That's not a bad idea. And I'm with you on seeing where this leads. What if no one has explored this before? We could be the first." A cool breeze rushed past us coming from the cave depths, sending a tiny shiver down my spine. Mark and I both looked up at each other puzzled before the former spoke. "Where did that breeze come from? You think an exit is coming somewhere?" "Maybe, but it would have had to travel pretty far. I mean, look, it's still just going straight down," I replied, crouching down and shining my flashlight down the descent. "Well, it's safe to say Josh is officially out. Should we head back with him or keep going?" Emily yelled out loud, rounding the corner towards Mark and I. All of us looked between each other, sharing glances here and there, silently debating whether or not to continue the journey. Mark and Emily began discussing something that I couldn't hear, even though they were right in front of me. Something else was in their voices' place. It sounded almost like when you turn off an old box TV and the high-pitched ring whispers out of it. Focusing so much on that sound, I didn't notice they were talking to me till Emily put her hand on my shoulder. "Are you okay? Were you listening to anything?" "Yeah, sorry. I just zoned out for a second thinking of what to do," I replied, the sound still slightly whispering in my ear, as if it was beckoning me to find its source.
So, you are the deciding vote if we should keep going. If one of us doesn't want to, we all leave. I know that we should have had Josh in on this, but what he said to Emily wasn't acceptable. We'll have to all have a talk with him when we're all done. What did he say to Emily? Why would his vote count if he left? Thoughts flooded my mind until I noticed Mark and Emily still awaiting my reply. I think we should just keep going for a little bit and see if the map ends up matching or not. It doesn't hurt. As long as we mark the way with chalk, we should be good. Finally replying while pushing out a piece of chalk and drawing an arrow towards the exit. Emily and Mark shared a glance and smiled at me before the latter said, "We knew you'd always be up for an adventure." "Just like when we were kids," Emily said, slightly blushing while rubbing her hand on my shoulder. "What are you waiting for? Let's go then," I replied, placing the chalk in my pocket and smiling at the two. As we continued through the cave, I noticed that it was not at all what we had thought it was. The further it went down, the more we all knew it wasn't. We gave up on using the map after about hour 3 and just stuck with chalk on the walls. There was a few split tunnels that led to dead ends, and it took a lot of walking back and forth before finding a crack in the wall to squeeze through. Mark went first to ensure it went somewhere, and when he gave us the signal for it did, Emily and I took off our packs and followed suit. Once through the crack and down another short little tunnel, we made it to a large and expansive open chamber filled with foxfire fungi and other bioluminescent plants that I wasn't able to distinguish. It was intoxicating and beautiful, almost like we were in another world. Emily's laugh echoed from my right, and as I looked towards her, I saw her arm was outstretched in front of her, fingers wiggling at what appeared to be a glowing butterfly dancing in the cave. Her smile was intoxicating, and her laugh made my legs feel like jelly. So many times I messed up with her and shared how I felt never went well. I just didn't want to make things awkward. "Are you ever going to tell her how you feel?" Mark's voice jolted me back to reality as I looked over my shoulder to him. A somber look laid in his eyes as he waited for a response. "We tried one time and things didn't go well, but then things got weird after the whole Colorado incident." "That wasn't your fault. Jones wasn't listening and..." "Don't. Just stop." He followed me. "I put her brother in a coma and she never forgave me. It doesn't matter that it was an accident." Mark stood there looking at me with pleading eyes until they glanced over my shoulder towards where Emily was. I watched as his eyes widened and I quickly wheeled around to see what he was looking at. Emily was not where she just was. Heart dropping, I hastily made my way towards Emily's last location and saw her flashlight on the floor. Picking it up, I spoke out loud, "Where did she go?" Silence filled, and as I turned to head back, I saw Mark scanning the expansive chamber we were in. That's when I noticed something about the plants and vines here. They seemed to be pulsing, almost as though the cave was alive and breathing. Looking back at Mark, I saw the color drain from his face. From how pale he was, I could tell he noticed the same thing. But that's impossible. There's no way this is a living and breathing cave. Standing back up and getting ready to speak, I noticed that sound again. The faint ringing of an old TV turning off. Scanning the area again, I noticed a shade of green light amidst the purple and blue. It wasn't like the others that were all over. This green light appeared to be coming just above the crack in the wall across the breathing chamber. Grabbing Mark's shoulder to get his attention, I pointed towards it and said, "There, she must have gone in there. The color doesn't match the surroundings. Might be one of her glow sticks." Mark just nodded and began making his way across the chamber as I followed. Vines hung down, rubbing over my shoulders and head as we made our way through them, leaving a trail of bioluminescent liquid over our clothing.
Reaching up a finger to feel it, I began rubbing it between my thumb and forefinger. The fluid felt like the inside of an alloy plant, and the light stretched with it as I peeled my fingers apart. I had never seen anything like this before. Stopping in the midst of the flora and fauna, I knelt down and began cutting samples from a couple plants on the ground. They stayed glowing even after they had been cut. After collecting a few more samples and moss, I placed them in a jar and closed my pack. Hopefully I could grow some of these, or at least bring them to the botanist. "What the F are you doing?" Mark's voice radiated from 10 yards in front of me. Anger rippled through it. "Our friend is missing and you're what, collecting plants?" Shocked and frozen, I just realized what I had been doing. "I'm sorry, I just got caught up. We've never seen anything like this. I just wanted to get some samples. I don't know what came over me." Mark's glare drilled into me until his eyes began to soften as he spoke. "I get it. It's beautiful down here and new. But come on, man, you know better. Let's find Emily and find our way out. We'll collect some of this and take pictures." I just stood up and nodded, feeling shame come over me as I made my way to him. What had gotten into me? How could I just have forgotten we were trying to get Emily? It's like the second I got out of the car, my thoughts and actions were not my own. "We need to get out of this cave when we find her," I told Mark as soon as I got to his side. "I agree. Just a few more feet and a little squeeze through here and hopefully she's in there," Mark replied while pointing at the crack. The electrifying green light still spewing out of it as though it was an emerald geo. As we reached the crack, Mark and I looked inside but couldn't see anything because the little tunnel through the crack skewed to the right a bit. Our eyes met at the same time as both our hands lifted in the air in the shape of a fist, signaling the battle that was about to rage. Giving each other a nod, we set the motion of bringing our fists up and down 3 times until the fourth the weapon was chosen. I signaled scissors, and Mark signaled rock, making him the victor. "Damn it," I said through my teeth as I unstrapped my pack and placed it in the crack before following it. "You gotta stop picking scissors, man. You'll never win," Mark replied with a grin. "There's a strategy to it. You just wait," I retorted before squeezing into the crack and pushing my way through. The crack tunnel seemed to stretch for about 10 feet before it skewed a few more to the right, opening up into another chamber. This one was similar to the one we had came through, and no bioluminescent plants littered the area. This chamber was lush, however, with cave moss covering the walls and vines beautifully draped all around. Tiny little saplings somehow laid inside, and a tiny crack on the ceiling was letting in the faintest light. Maybe that led to the surface. That would explain the fauna in here. Stepping into the chamber more, I noticed that there was a crescent-shaped perimeter of water around the rocks I was stepping on. It seemed to stretch almost the whole perimeter of the chamber, the darkness of it screaming at me not to touch or go in. While scanning the water's perimeter is where I noticed the green light was coming from. In the center of the chamber was what appeared to be a stone monolith erected out of the ground a few feet high. On top of the monolith laid what appeared to be a 1977 Apple II computer powered on. Green screen lighting up the surrounding brighter than what seemed to be possible. Standing in awe at what I was seeing, I heard Mark's voice behind me say, "What the F? Is that a computer?" I was frozen still, the ringing sound coming in my ears tenfold. Mark brushed past me, leaning towards the ancient technology before stopping and saying aloud back to me, "Emily's right here. It looks like she fainted." Everything began to feel extremely slow as I watched Mark get closer to the computer and Emily before seizing up like he had gotten tased and falling to the ground. The thump of him hitting the ground is what rose me from my stupor, ringing slowly fading away. Just enough staying to beckon me to the computer, but not to my friends. This is what must have been making the noise I was hearing the whole time. Walking closer to the computer, I noticed that things were being typed on the screen, skittering across like an old game of snake. Too far away to read what was being written, I slowly inched closer and closer, waiting to pass out like the others, but nothing came. I was there now, right in front of the computer, able to read everything off the screen. The containment chamber had been cracked. A soul is trapped in stone. The investigator is close to the end. Another town has been taken. Soon it will fall. The Wild Hunt is awaiting its command. Hello? I spoke out loud to the old computer, its typing finally ceasing. Hello? I said aloud again, even going as far as typing it on the computer. The clicks of the keys echoed through the cave, sending shivers down my spine after each clack. It is asking for recognition. Is anyone else here? Who's typing this? I am here, and I could hear you. Jolted across the screen, line blinking as though it was awaiting a response. Who are you? What happened to my friends? Are they dead? Just in a trance. You were the only one that heard my song. The reasoning for that is still to be determined. Your song? I replied in a shaken voice, not knowing if I was hallucinating or not. Yes, yes. Now it makes sense. I could see it now. You were the only one who had touched the obsidian chrysalis. May have even taken a piece. I grabbed my necklace as thoughts flashed through my mind. They were of a caving trip we went on a year ago. The one where Emily's brother fell. Not heeding warnings, we were in a place we weren't supposed to be, which caused us both to end up falling through a sinkhole in a cave leading us into a small chamber. Almost about the size of this one, an obsidian monolith standing erect in the center. It seemed to have been humming and a faint glow resonated off of it. The darkness inside was almost indistinguishable, swallowing every bit of light I shined at it. Looking around, I noticed Jones under a bit of rocks and rumble. But instead of going to him, I began walking towards the monolith, hand outstretched. Something in me told me not to touch it, but a bigger presence seemed to have taken over and made me. I remember it felt like getting an electric shock and the humming of the stone reverberated through my body. Standing there, I was unable to move as though I was glued to it. A loud crack sounded, and what sounded like thunder echoing through the chamber. My hand fell as though I was no longer glued to it, and in its place where my hand was, a tiny broken-off piece of obsidian jolted out. Slowly reaching up, I grabbed it and proceeded to wrap it in an extra sock, still feeling the hum and electricity flowing from it. Going back to where we fell from, Jones still laid silent under rubble. Shaking and slapping him seemed to do nothing to stir him. Finally, after a few more minutes, the others' flashlights could be seen shining down the hole towards my face. We had to tie him up and haul him out of the cave and straight to the hospital. Ever since then, he had been asleep. I made a necklace out of the shard to remind me of how selfish I was. I swore to myself to only take it off once he awoke. I could see it now. You are remembering. The chrysalis takes and gives. That's why you were able to communicate with me. Only a few have been able to. What are you? I asked, feeling the dread build up in me from remembering what happened. I am not of this dimension. Most of us aren't. The tears in reality are closing, trapping us. That didn't answer my question, I said aloud, getting angry. You will not be able to understand what I am. I am... The typing seemed to have ceased, and only a faint line was blinking slowly on the screen. Hello? Are you still there? I asked out loud, shaking the computer slightly. The void is free. It walks in this world. Kept writing itself over and over, filling the screen from top to bottom. Rumbling could be felt from below my legs, shaking me slightly. The same words still being repeated on the screen before finally going blank and being replaced with, "The end is near." Then shutting off, the ringing echoing with it as the thin line across the screen dissipated into nothing. The rumbling of the cave ceased, and a small whirring noise took its place. Confused, I looked around and saw a wire from the computer leading to what to be an old metal lunchbox. Kneeling down, I inspected the lunchbox and rubbed my fingers over the metal. The faint humming seemed to be coming from inside. Slowly and reluctantly, my fingers made their way to the small latch at the front, flipping it up. Nothing could have prepared me for what laid inside. There was a clear purple stone inside of it with what appeared to be an octopus encased inside the stone. The octopus, however, seemed to be clear as well, except it wasn't. Stars and galaxies looked to be moving within it. I could see the star of new ones and the end of others. It was like I was looking at a time lapse of space from the beginning to end, almost driving me mad. Summoning the remaining strength I had left, I closed the lunchbox. That tiny octopus with galaxies inside still appeared in my mind. A beep rang out and the sound of a printer followed. Standing up, I saw a small sheet coming out of the computer, and a cassette tape followed it. I grabbed the cassette tape, flipping it through my fingers and examining it, before setting it down and ripping off the piece of paper that's still attached to the computer still. Bringing it closer to my eyes, I read, "Bring the cassette to the investigator. He is our only hope. The end is coming." Setting the paper down, even more confused than I already was, I began to feel lightheaded. The ringing happened in my ears again before I finally stopped as I hit the ground. I awoke outside the grass in front of the cave mouth. Mark and Emily stood above me asking if I was okay. The events of what happened flashed through my mind. I nodded as I stood and saw Josh, Max, and Jane behind them all strapped up for exploring the cave. "Get your stuff on and get ready. We'll meet you in the cave," Mark said, patting my shoulder before signaling the rest of the group to follow. It must have been a dream, I thought to myself as I looked around the area. It was different from the one I first started at. That's a relief, I said to myself, walking towards my car to get my supplies out of it. As I reached into my pocket to grab my keys, I found something in their place instead. Pulling it out, I read the note. "Bring the cassette to the investigator. He is our only hope. The end is coming." A clear cassette tape with an octopus laden on it. The same octopus that now seemed to be tattooed on my palm. It wasn't a dream. The end is really coming.